Welcome to Under the Fig Tree podcast. In today's episode, hosts Reverend Micah Glenn and Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt sit down with a special guest as they meditate under the fig tree.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of Under the Fig Tree. Ben, how are you today, bro?
I'm all right, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. I didn't sleep great last night. Do you ever have those nights where you're just like, ugh, don't sleep well? Wake up in the middle of the night, never go back to sleep.
Like stress and anxiety, or just, you know, old man can't sleep kind of thing?
I'm just worried about all of our applicants. I'm sure thinking about them.
No, it's a lot going on in life.
There's a lot going on, and
time has changed.
Yeah, life is good, but it's just one of those days.
I'm with you, but full of hope. The sun is shining outside.
Yeah, it is.
It is cold. I was gonna say it's not as cold.
The flowers have peaked out. Yeah, little and
daffodils.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that, and this is gonna make me sound like a monster, it's like your cat thing. Is we get.
I think about that every day almost.
I
can't believe I said that.
And you can let me know if this was the case when you lived in house 9. We get a ton of squirrels in the yard.
Yep.
And I think it's all because of oak trees. Anyway, everybody but me in the house loves them.
Oh.
And I just want to set Scruffy loose on them every single morning.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're joined by two fantastic hosts.
Getting promoted.
What?
Moving to the
guests is what I would like to call them.
None of us are sleeping well. We're joined by two fantastic guests. And it's because, listen, because I was going to do the thing that everybody does to us anyway. I was going to call you Reverend Doctor. But there's only one Reverend Doctor in the room at the moment. But we're joined by Reverend Jesse Kuecker and Reverend Tom Schlund. How are you guys?
We're good.
Doing pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom, I'm not going to lie. Ever since I've taken German and become an expert in the language, when I see your name, I always want to pronounce it Schlund.
That would be the good German pronunciation, I think.
But
I don't know what Schlund. It means, though. Do you know what Schlund means auf Deutsch?
Tall.
Not
could be.
I'm not 100% sure on this.
Actually, I think that's gross, right? Anyway.
It's like wide gaping hole, I think. So not very exciting.
Huh.
The only redeeming quality for it is that there's a big web hosting company in Germany that's like Schlund and Partner. So
I was gonna say
they at least do some technology stuff.
Imagine your ancestors were like the town gossips though.
Right.
That would make that last name incredible.
Yes.
So it's good to have you guys on. We've been wanting to have you on the podcast for a good long while, and y'all have been busy. We should just talk about this on the podcast, because I don't think that we've actually said on the podcast how we're doing this season with application numbers. But tell us what apps are looking like.
Well, I mean, it would probably make sense to let our listeners know who Jesse and Tom are.
That's probably a good idea.
And what we have to do with application numbers. Right,
exactly. We're the host.
You're the host.
Yes. The host of Under the Fig Tree.
Welcome to our podcast, Under the Fig Tree.
We've made it, it's everybody. Me and Ben have just been messing around. These are the actual hosts of the podcast. Me and Ben are sailing off into the sunset. No, but Jesse and Tom are admissions officers for our enrollment department.
Yep.
Yes, we are.
So we've been here for about a year. Well, I've been here for just over a year. Jesse just hit his year mark of working on that. So newer members of the enrollment team, but have dove in headfirst and really hit the ground running this last year.
Yeah. We've already had Monica and Sarah on, and so we should let our listeners know that we like the team that God has put together, and we call ourselves the Dream Team. Now, I don't know. It seems a little stuffy to say that we call ourselves the Dream Team. I don't know if anybody else ever calls us the Dream Team, but
just needed a name for the group text. Yeah.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's just an internal thing, but I like it though.
Yeah. I think that we should be known as the Dream Team. I think we do have a great team. So, yeah, it's good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Longtime listener, first time guest. So.
Yes.
You know, and it's funny. It's one of those things. Well, we have, and just to be sure, so everybody knows, because it wasn't the case for Dr. Bodie, who said he's been waiting to come on. It's like, well, it's not like we didn't want you to come on. It's always like a scheduling thing. But Jesse usually is too busy for us. And that is the case, and that's why it's taken so long to have him on. So.
This is solely my fault, for sure.
It's been a lot of hustling to get those applications.
That's right. Right. That's right.
Legit, though.
Yeah, he's been on the phone literally since, you know, August. Just on the phone all the time. You look at that little button on the phone, and it's like, oh, yep, Jesse's talking on the phone. Yep. So tell us a little bit about how our fall MDiv class for 2023 looks.
Sure. Yeah, we have some encouraging news to share. Tom and I we're still learning the ropes. We've been in this role, as he said, just around over a year. So, you know, we set some goals, trying to figure out what to do and what works, what doesn't work, quickly pivot to the things that are showing results. And so, yeah, we've had 1 year under our belts. And as of today, our MDiv application numbers for this coming fall 23 MDiv program, so the residential class, we're at right at 100 applications. For next year's class, which is the most applications that the seminary has had for the MDiv in over a decade, which is very fantastic news. We're hoping that we get maybe one or two more this month, so it's not just like
one.
We don't want people.
We made that.
We don't want people just to think we made it up.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, we're constantly at work and thankful for. The pastors and the laity and so many people out in the church who are encouraging these young men to strongly consider coming to the sim.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our time is taken up, like you were kind of alluding to, with either the initial conversations to get people to apply or working them through the application process, which is what's made scheduling for Under the Fig Tree more challenging because that's where we spend a lot of our day.
Yeah.
Focused. And then you have to, it's not just getting guys to turn stuff in, it's waiting for pastors to write letters of recommendation for applicants. I only said that because I have one to write for John.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, I know when the committee is. It'll be there, and John will be ready to go to committee.
Mike is the easiest one to track down. We just yell out the office. Right. Yeah. Mike, have you written the letter yet?
You heard it here.
I have looked at the guidelines.
Yeah, good.
That's halfway there.
I have thought about all the answers. And now it's putting it on paper. Like this is a process, guys. I mean, this is what I do for every graduate school paper. I read the required material. I make an outline so I know where I want to start, where I want to finish. If it makes sense in between, and then you go. And then it'll probably take me, I don't know, not because John is an interesting person, but it'll probably take me all of 10 minutes to actually write it. But
yeah, I always try to help applicants have a reasonable expectation of the process. And I tell them, so there's a part of the application you can control, like the application, the short answer questions, all of those things. And then there's a part that you can't, and that's your pastor's letter,
right.
Your district interview. We might wait months for those things to come in, but we'll get them in and you'll get to committee. And
exactly.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. John will be ready for the March committee. I promise.
Some pastors are like Micah. Some other ones have it to us within a day, but... We're thankful for all of them.
Never mind. I was going to toot my own horn for a second, but I think we do that enough around the office. So if you're listening, exciting numbers for our applications. Although, like, for us, once this application cycle finishes, the summer, we might get, like, a week or two of a lull, and then we're right back to it thinking of the fall of 2024. Mm-hmm. And so, again, if you're listening and you're thinking about becoming a pastor, deaconess, church worker, go to our website, fill out the RFI so Jesse can give you a call, or want somebody from our team give you a call. It'll most likely be Jesse. And if you're a lay person in particular, and there's somebody around your congregation, there are a lot of different ways and different resources. We have postcards that we can send out to you with QR codes that give a link to our request for information. The biggest challenge is just simply knowing who's out there. Who might have the gifts and skills and talents to become a church worker, along with the desire and the support. And so it's crucial for us to know who those people are and how we can get in contact with them. And so, if you know somebody or you yourself, just fill out the RFI, let us know. There's no commitment or anything like that, except for a conversation with Jesse. That's your biggest commitment. But he's a great guy. I'd talk to you on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have in the past. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So before we, unless you wanted to say something else about numbers enrollment.
No, that's great. I'm ready to.
You're both pastors, and you have your own story of what led you to become a pastor. And so it's something we like to do a lot when we have especially new guests come on. If you could just take a moment and think about your own personal story and then share with our listeners what was the way for you. You know, I only think I said that because I started watching The Mandalorian. What was your path to becoming a church worker in the LCMS?
Take it away, Tom.
So I come from a family of pastors. My dad's a pastor. My grandpa was a pastor. I have uncles and cousins and stuff. And with all of that, all I knew my whole life was that I was never, ever going to be a pastor, which I've come to find out now talking to a lot of students. That's a fairly common story. Nothing against the church. Loved it. Was good with all of that. But I don't know. I just didn't know if I wanted everything that came along with the pastor's life. So I was listening to Dr. Bodie's episode from last week, and he was talking about all of his really great experiences in right. the church. And I had a lot of good ones, but none kind of like him that pushed me up over the top right away. And my parents were great, though, in that they really encouraged the necessity for strong, faithful lay people, too. And so went to college, enjoyed that. Went to grad school, found a path that I really enjoyed, working with college students and kind of helping them make the transition into school. And throughout all of that, got involved with campus ministries where I was at and had the opportunity to lead Bible studies and be active and volunteer within the church and continued to have those people, just like from my childhood, who had posed the question, have you ever thought about being a pastor? And the answer was always, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. But as I got older and as I was working with students, especially those in some pretty significant life crisis moments, I was struck by how unsatisfying the hope that the world gives us is, or how there isn't really a lot of hope that the world gives us. And so you find yourself in crisis of legal issues or a death within the family or all of these different things that people struggle with. And sometimes the response is, you know, you got to find what makes you feel happy. And in my life, working with students, a lot of times what was making them feel happy was also what was getting them into trouble. And so like that kind of advice is not very satisfying. And looking at the hope that we have in Christ and the promise for everlasting life and just everything that we have in our Christian faith and everything that the world is sort of looking for, I realized, hey, this is really important, A. And then as I reflected on some of the skills and experiences that God had given to me, I started to see how those matched up with pastoral ministry and the opportunity to serve full-time within the church. So. Yeah. At that point, when I sort of had this realization, I was working at a university a couple hours west of here, and my younger brother was already enrolled at the seminary. So I had a few times to come over and visit, realize that maybe this place wasn't as scary as I originally thought it was going to be, and came on a visit event. I just had those pictures pop up actually on my time hop memories a couple of days ago of coming to one of the contemplate or something and said, well, guess I'm going to quit my job and come to the seminary. And so did that and had a great time. Like coming to the seminary as a student was a blast. And it's a lot of fun to be back now.
Yeah. That's awesome. I was this morning when I was up very early, had all this extra time on my hands. I was preparing for a class that I'm teaching this summer, and I was reading through some things that Luther said on the church, and he has this writing on creeds in the church, on creeds and councils, and he talks about the seven marks of the church, mm-hmm. and the final mark, these are like things that every church has, and the final mark of the church that he lists is the Holy Cross, and by that he doesn't mean every real church has a cross up front.
Right.
That I think is goes without saying for Luther. But what he means is that the real church constantly bears suffering, challenges, and what a different message that is from the world saying just do whatever makes you happy. Christ calls us to follow him, and as Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, that sometimes, well, that is a call to come and die to ourself, and to be raised to a whole new life. What a remarkable kind of flip on its head, the worldly advice that the church gives. And there's great hope in the midst of our suffering.
Absolutely. Amen. Well, it's interesting that that's the seventh mark, because I feel like in my nearly 7 years of serving in the parish before coming back, that was only reinforced for me over and over and over again that, you know, you look at a world that needs hope and comfort,
yeah.
Some sort of restoration for ills and problems, forgiveness, something to look forward to after death and dealing with death. And I just think about everything that Christ gives through his church is exactly what the world is looking for right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know, as Christians, if we can only get out of our own way and bring it, like let God work through us,
yeah.
We just have such remarkable gifts to bring.
Yeah. And I took it as an assurance, because I've faced lots of crosses, challenges, maybe not more than other people. Everybody has different crosses that they have to bear. But it's kind of good to know that this is just part of the Christian life. I'm not weird, and I'm not kind of marked by God if I'm going through one of these crisis moments that you were talking about with your students. So, yeah. And what a great opportunity to become a church worker, to bring that hope and the forgiveness of sins, eternal life, the promise to be with Christ forever to other people.
Mm-hmm. But also, lots of things I love about your story, but it's that example of, I would consider you second career, because you had a legitimate career. People ask me if I was second career. I'm like, I guess maybe technically in a sense, because I wasn't fresh. I wasn't 22 when I got to the seminary.
I say 1.5 sometimes.
There we go. I like that a little
bit. To differentiate better. Myself from the guys who were out for 20 years.
But it's one of these things where you go and you acquired a different skill set, not thinking you're going to become a pastor. Then you become a pastor, and then you receive a call where that skill set that you have working in higher education has been imperative for our team. And so it's one of these things where, like, everybody on our team has a bunch of different natural gifts and all these other things. But of the team, I mean, I guess now all of us have worked in enrollment. But prior to our work in enrollment, you're the only one who had experience in that realm. And there's just so much wisdom that comes from you, where you say, well, maybe if we thought about it this way. And it's just that kind of we're all looking at the same thing. And we all take like a half step to the left, and that gives us a perspective to see our work more clearly and our direction and our goals more clearly, that I think helps us all excel, which I always appreciate those little nuggets of enrollment wisdom that we're all trying to mine. But it's like, oh, wait, I got this thing here. It's not exactly like a one-for-one corollary thing to the seminary, but if we put it here and we all look at it and we all kind of, you know, take our steps around it, we can get there. And I always really appreciate that. So it's, again, and there are a lot of second career pastors like that have an even 1.5 career pastors who have that experience, where like people will say, well, I've done this in my past, but being a pastor is completely different. Is that a possible thing? It's like, you never know. Having I say this all the time, having a degree in chemistry in Huntsville, Alabama, where there were rocket scientists in the congregation, gave me some credit. So you just never know. And I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So Jesse, let's hear your story.
Yeah. So my story is about the exact opposite of Tom's. Tom comes from a line of pastors. No one in my family was a pastor. Tom's a Chicago Cubs fan. I'm a Cardinals fan. And Tom's tall and I'm short, so we've got a lot of opposites. But my first memory of ministry was when I was 3 years old. So I grew up Roman Catholic, and so I was at Mass with my parents, sitting in the pew, and I remember the priest was about to give the benediction, and I looked up at my mother, and I asked if I could do that, and I remember her looking down at me with this kind of smile in her eyes, thinking probably of her son being a priest someday, you know, down the road, and she said, yes. And I had more immediate plans. So with her permission, I stood up in that pew and I faced the congregation. Yes. I put my hands out and I gave some sort of benediction.
Babbling benediction.
Yeah. And my dad quickly slammed my butt back into the pew. But the joke was on him because 23 years later, I would finally get to do it. Nice. But throughout my whole childhood, I would have these moments. They would come and go, ebb and flow. As I talk with prospective students, we often talk about it as a drip, 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 you know, where all of a sudden, you know, I'm mowing the yard and I start thinking about what would I preach if I were to preach a sermon? Or whenever I was 7 or 8, because I couldn't have communion yet, I would come home and I'd make my own communion set.
Yeah.
And pretend to have communion, you know, like who does that? Well, I did. I was a weird kid. And then I just had a natural draw to the scriptures that I loved to read the Bible and talk theology with my fellow classmates in high school. And it was something that I thought maybe someday I'll teach this. Maybe I'll be like a teacher at a Lutheran school or work in a church with the youth, or that's kind of where it started. And I would look back on my life at all these moments, you know, where I would sometimes when I would see my pastors walk into the church, and I had phenomenal pastors growing up, my heart would nearly leap out of my chest some days. Mm. You know, all of a sudden it would hit me, wham, I'm supposed to do that. Or whenever they're, you know, reading the words of institution, bam, like there was just this pull, you know, out of, kind of from outside of yourself, this notes sort of draw, and those things would happen, but then I would quickly distract myself with other things, you know, and it didn't take much.
Counting the tiles on the ceiling.
You're right, yeah. Or like my little sister would need to be taken out of church because she was crying. I'd be the first one to volunteer. You know, I'll take her out. We'd walk around. So there was kind of this tug of war throughout my whole life. Yeah. Of there were clear moments where I felt this is what I'm supposed to do, even all the way back to 3 years old. And then there were clear moments where I'm like, nope, I'm not doing that. And so I empathize with Tom in that way. And yeah, and so I went to college with the idea to major in the Bible, biblical studies, and see where the Lord would take me. But then I also had this passion for business, and that was kind of winning the day. I was deciding more business route, and then down the road as a true second career guy, 20 years later, then I'll eventually become a pastor. And that was kind of my own way of negotiating with God, which I've learned you don't negotiate with God.
We all try.
Right.
We all try.
So I made it a year after graduating college and in the business world that I decided it's time to go to seminary. And thankfully, I had a supportive wife, very supportive pastors back at home, so many supportive people around me constantly saying, you can do it. We see in you that you can do it. And these were the voices I would go to as I was struggling. You know, there were so many people around that I could reach out to and ask and and receive that encouragement. And so, yeah, the part of the podcast we haven't shared yet is that all three of us, Micah, Tom, and I came to seminary the same year in 2011. Oh, yeah. So all three of us are classmates. And I'm a big fan of our class. I think we had a phenomenal class.
Absolutely.
And now it's yeah, I went out and served for 7 years as a pastor, and now I'm back here with these incredible men. And one of the big draws was when I got the call. Tom had already accepted, and I said, I get to work with this guy? Yeah, I mean, because Tom was a natural leader in our class. He was our president. Highly respected him and his work. And so now Tom and I are a team in admissions. And
a good team.
He hasn't quite converted over to the Cardinal side, but we're working on it.
Which still puts me on bad terms with President Egger, but right. We make it through, so that's all right.
We won't talk about that.
Yeah.
Jesse, two follow-up questions. So first, I'm interested in hearing a little bit of the story about your switch, the progress from Roman Catholicism to Lutheranism. My wife grew up Roman Catholic as well, and so we might have some listeners out there who are not necessarily Lutheran, maybe looking to become Lutheran, or who have made a switch late in life. So I think that's interesting. And the second thing is, I know what business you were in before you decided to come to seminary, but I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about that business.
Sure. Well, to your first question, if I could sum it up in a word, it's grace.
Mm. Yeah.
And
but the Lutheran kind of grace, not the Catholic grace. Right. Sorry. I'm reading the Book of Concord for class, so it's like it's just fresh in my mind.
Right. Now, I didn't really have anything. Oh, I know I didn't have anything to do with the switch from Roman Catholicism to Lutheranism. That was that switch was made by my parents when I was still young. My mother, she watched the Luther movie, like the old black and white 1960s film, and after watching that film, and because of some other experiences in the Roman Catholic Church, she told my dad that night, "We're becoming Lutheran."
Wow!
So there you go.
Now my for the Luther film.
Now my dad had grown up Lutheran, so it wasn't completely foreign to them. Yeah. And my hometown's Perryville, Missouri. So in Perry
there are
County,
a few Lutherans there.
You're either Lutheran or you're Catholic, pretty much in Perryville. So, when I was still young, in elementary school, we converted.
Cool.
Yeah. To the business question. So whenever I was 15 or 16, I started working in a shoe store, and I was the guy that just, you know, when you came into the shoe store and you needed a pair of shoes, I would get you your pair of shoes, and then whenever you needed to check out, we'd take you to the counter, and I'd try to sell you on an extra pair of socks, too, while you were checking out, you know? And then that quickly turned into more. So long story short there, I ended up creating and managing an online shoe store for 11 years that I ran out of that brick and mortar store all through college and then even all through seminary. So it was something I was able to do while being here in classes, which was wonderful because as you know, I love numbers.
Yeah.
And
the numbers.
I love crunching numbers, and I ran in college, so the shoe store was a technical running shoe store, and so I loved working with runners, guiding them on what shoe was best for them, and we sold a lot of shoes in those 11 years, but on call day in April of 2015, I hung up the shoes, I resigned, and was fully a pastor from that day forward.
I was going to say, you know, our listeners know that we talk a lot about shoes on this podcast and not about my shoes, but if you wanted to go back into the business, I think you'd have a pretty good customer over here.
Right.
Well, I mean, or partner, because I just know, like, these are the ones, this is the run we need if we want to pop off.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I just
and then
keep a pair for myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Not buy. If we're partners, that's part of your income is getting the fresh pair of kicks you chose.
I'm not sure that would be a great business.
So, but
Micah could be the face for the brand.
Jesse's,
I'll take all of our free shoes.
Jesse is a shoe guy.
Yeah,
he doesn't wear sneakers like I am, but like his kick game is strong.
Yeah,
like those brown boots you just got.
Yeah,
those are solid.
What he didn't say but thought was, as compared to the others on our team,
it's true.
No. I see. I think Tom could and would. But Tom, if you can't tell, is a giant.
It's true.
And has like a size 20 foot. Maybe not quite.
18. It limits
enough.
The number of shoes that I can buy. So
exactly.
I'd be happy to diversify my options, but there's not many that exist.
Nike, you need me to be a spokesperson, and you also need to start making more size 18s for Tom.
Nobody from Nike is listening.
You never know.
Someday.
You never know. When Things get memed and pop off real quick. You just can't be too shy these days. If you ask not, you have not because you ask not, or something like that.
Enough said.
Someday the Nike swoosh will be right up there on the board.
I'm with it.
Under the Fig Tree, brought to you by Nike.
So you're both admissions officers now, which means you work very closely with our applicants, and especially our applicants for our ministerial formation program. So here's just a softball question. What do you love about your job? What do you love to do?
Do you want to go? Or you want me to go?
I can go.
Go for it.
I love talking to students.
Yeah.
I love...
and applicants, right?
Yeah. Sorry, prospective students. Yeah, thank you. I love talking to the young man or second career man who's somewhere out there who has this thought but doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, they've talked with their pastor. If they haven't talked with their pastor, that's always my first encouragement. Talk with your pastor. But they've talked with their pastor. Their pastor's encouraging them. Other people around them are encouraging them. But for whatever reason, there's been sometimes years-long buildup of waiting to call the seminary. Because as soon as you make that contact, it feels a little bit official or something.
Right.
But they finally get to that point. And I would say to any man that's in that position right now, it's not that super official to just call and talk to me and to call the seminary. Go ahead and reach out, because if your pastor or someone around you has seen in you some qualities that would serve the church and you've thought about this from time to time and there's been that drip, 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 please reach out. I love talking to people like that because they've got questions and they want to see what this might look like, and that's why we're here. We're here to support, to pray, to help answer questions, and just overall to encourage people to continue to prayerfully consider this divine work and divine calling. So that's what awesome. I love the most.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was my answer to the conversations with students and the ability to help answer those questions. Because I think a lot of times there's a perception that gets built up in our minds, or we have somebody tell us something and that just kind of sticks as this is how the seminary is, or this is how that part is, or that it's going to be super expensive for me to come, or it's going to be really hard for me to do this. And to be able to talk through each of those questions and actually give information about like our guaranteed tuition and about the way that we work people through summer Greek and the way that the curriculum is established and how our faculty or our pastors who actually care about you as a person and forming good pastors, kind of you start to see the sense of relief if you get to see them face to face, or you can kind of hear that sense of relief too as, oh, all of these things that were stumbling blocks are sort of starting to fall away. That sometimes gets scary too, because they're like, oh, I thought I had a good wall built right up, but now that the wall is kind of falling down, maybe this is the path. And there's joy in with that as well. But I think just getting to know people and hearing their stories, there's a lot of encouragement in that. You know, I mentioned, I think in the beginning of mine, how I thought, or I come to find that my story is not as uncommon as I might have thought, this kind of windy road. And that's reinforced to me every time I have those kinds of conversations with prospective students. But that's one of the things that I've liked about Under the Fig Tree too, is we get to take the conversations that we all get to hear on a regular basis and open them up for more people to hear. And so like every time somebody tells a story on here about what their path was, I think there's a place for people to connect and to say, oh, that sounds kind of like where I am at or where I've been. And so that's a huge part of moving along in the discernment process.
That's awesome. One of the things, I'm going to jump back in unless you have another question.
No, I give you my permission.
All right. Thank you.
As
he is the host, I'm the co-host. So,
well, as host, or give you permission. Or you're too, so.
Right. He's never called me a host before.
Well, Quick question, and then okay, I'll actually let you go. Since you said that, when I wasn't here, did you introduce yourself as the host? Because if you did, you're in trouble. You stole my intro.
We'll have to look back.
Go to the tape.
I think right. I said I'm the co-host of this podcast, and the host isn't here.
There's no way. Like there's that. No way.
I don't know what I said.
Well, anyway.
It was just pure laughter the whole way through. It was just probably me stumbling over my words. Mm-hmm. No, I was gonna say it's really important to me, and it was really important to the seminary. We talked actually a lot about this when the two positions that you have filled were open and vacant. We had a lot of conversation at the seminary around what kind of a person are we looking for to fill these roles. And there frankly was some conversation around, do we need pastors to fill these roles for admissions officers, especially working with pastoral applicants? And I think it's really good that you're both pastors. I'm interested in just hearing what were some of your favorite moments in ministry? I know that you both had a wonderful experience as parish pastors, and I wanted people in your roles who had a great pastoral experience, who loved the pastoral ministry and weren't like, oh, I'm dying to get out. I can't wait to get out of this or away from it, because you spend all day talking to people about coming into this role. So what were some of your favorite moments in ministry?
I'll go first.
Go for it.
So I think whenever I was in college and I was really still in the back and forth between business or pastoral ministry, I had a very faithful Lutheran pastor ask me one day, I was in his office, and he said, just point blank to me, why would you want to be a pastor? And I remember answering him.
That sounds like, oh man, trick question.
Yeah, I know, right? And he made me self-reflect on what was it about the ministry that I was pulled towards.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always this natural desire to want to bring communion to people. Hmm. I told him I want to bring communion and put it in the mouths of God's people. Wow. And even before seminary, that was kind of my great anticipated joy. And then throughout the 7 years I was a pastor, I would say it was always my constant, continuous joy to celebrate the sacrament and to bring it to the shut-in,
yeah,
to bring it to the person in the nursing home, to bring it to the one in the hospital who is about to die,
yeah,
and to see the tears in God's people as they approach the altar, because something happened that week in their lives,
yeah,
and they knew they needed this in a new way, in a fresh way. They realized once again, Jesus is here for you.
Yeah.
And you as a pastor, you have a different point of view on that day, because you know people say Lutherans don't show emotion. I tell people that we're like John in the womb. We leap for joy, you just don't see it. but at the altar as a pastor, you see it.
Yeah.
And it was such a joy to see that in so many people's faces, and just to be the broken vessel, just this is my body, this is my blood for, yeah, you. And and then also we started a maternity home ministry in Clinton where I served, and that grew into several homes, and being able to minister to those women, to hear their stories, and then to bring them into the faith and to baptize many of the children was a great joy during, wow, my ministry. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have two, I guess, that came to mind. One, I think, was expected, and one was unexpected. The one that I expected to sort of, or the part of pastoral ministry that I think I expected to enjoy, was teaching Bible study. That's one of my favorite sort of active things to do. And I had some opportunities to, I don't know, teach and lead Bible studies prior to coming to the seminary. And so just those moments of interaction where you get to have people in a room and you're looking at a text or you're looking at a topic and you're able to kind of go back and forth on it. And see where it's hitting in people's lives and the questions that they have about it and walk through that process was something that I enjoyed a lot. I think the unexpected one was visits. So like hospital and nursing home, mm-hmm. shut-in kinds of visits. Those, again, I guess one-on-one moments, kind of to your point, where you can actually see where things are hitting.
Yeah.
'Cause, you know, one of the maybe downsides in preaching is you get up and you preach this sermon that you've worked really hard on. You might have sort of a goal or a hope for it, but you get four or five comments in the line, oh, good, you know, good job or something. But you don't always know exactly where it hits in somebody's life. But, you know, when you're coming to do that end of life visit, or you're coming to visit somebody who you might be only one of three people they see the whole week besides their home health nurse and maybe a kid who lives close by, really gives you that opportunity to see how much comfort God's word brings and how much Christ's body and blood brings to them in those moments. And so I always really enjoyed those. And you hear some great stories in those visits, you know, people reflecting on their own lives, but you also get to bring such immediate comfort into people's lives that I really enjoyed that part of pastoral ministry too, which I think translates somewhat into the work that we do here.
What are you excited for as we're moving forward? So as a team, as enrollment at Concordia Seminary, what are you hoping for, thinking to fall of 2024 and beyond? You're just 1 year into your work. So what kinds of things do you hope that we'll be able to accomplish over the next couple of years?
Well, I'm thinking about a corollary. We've talked a lot about how if you call, you're going to talk to Jesse, but we haven't really talked about why I'm sitting on the couch or like what part I play in that. And I think one of the things that's exciting to me is one of the pivots that we've made here just recently. In January, we sort of shifted the way that Jesse and I operate from working, doing the exact same thing side by side to kind of shifting to taking care of people at two different parts. And so Jesse's doing a lot of those long initial conversations, helping guide people through the discernment and into the application process. Yeah. But then we work to try to provide more of this pastoral care as people go through the whole application. And so my interaction now with people is from application through enrollment and really trying to help us be more responsive to people's questions and help provide more of that guidance from the time you get the application until the time that you actually get to become a student here. And so we've already seen some good benefits, I think, from making that shift. And I think it's exciting to look forward to how that's going to keep playing out for people. But I think it's helpful for people to know, like, that's the kind of interaction that you'll have with us if you're heading down this path.
Yeah, I'm excited that Tom, you've brought us into the fully into the 21st century. So
yes.
Just not very long ago, we were still sending out attachments to emails that somebody had to print out, use a pen, and sign, and then scan somehow, and then email it back to us, or just put it into a mail and like lick a stamp, and hopefully you don't die from that's a Seinfeld reference. Anybody out there is a Seinfeld watcher. Our second career prospects, maybe. Sorry, I'm old. You don't know that reference to Seinfeld?
I might get two or three Seinfeld references. I know
you guys don't know the Seinfeld like the, reference
I know
either.
I know that No cow. Soup for You. Is that Seinfeld,
that's
right?
That's Seinfeld. All right, well.
You had me second guessing myself for a second.
At any rate, we used to have this very, very much the snail mail way, and you've brought us into the 21st century with DocuSign and all this stuff, or PandaDocs. Sorry, DocuSign. We've revoked our sponsorship for the video. PandaDoc is the new sponsor of Concordia Seminary. No, I'm just really glad that we have the opportunity to do this. It's so much easier mm-hmm. to click a couple of boxes and that kind of stuff. It's not like big and glamorous, but it sure does make the application process a lot smoother. And the last thing that we want is applying to Concordia Seminary to be a chore, or for it to be like, oh my gosh, this is the last place in the world that is making me do this.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one of the big things that Jesse and I are very committed to is improving the student experience all the way through. Yeah. From the first time that they submit the RFI, yep, and then get a text or a phone call, all the way until the day that they're here for summer Greek or for orientation in August, that it's a smooth experience, that you feel cared for, that you feel like, you know, you've had the opportunity to really get all of your questions answered and know at least as much as there is to know when you first come. Like, we didn't know half of what we were getting into when we came as students, you know, anywhere, but enough to be here and to start learning and to be prepared and formed and shaped to go out. And so that's our hope, at least. And yeah, every one of these little things that we add is kind of towards that goal.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I would add, kind of going back to your previous question too, I think it's related, that the fact that you have two ordained pastors who had served a church for 7 years and now we're here, we personally know what that looks like for a church to be vacant and to not have a pastor.
Wow.
And, you know, the names and the faces of our former parishioners now without a pastor is pretty motivating to the work that we do. Yeah. And it's hard to nail down a specific number on this. A lot of people wonder, and there are conflicting numbers, but I'd say there's roughly, you know, with what the district presidents have shared and President Harrison has shared and statistics on the Senate have shared, there's around 1,000 churches right now without a pastor. Yeah. in our country. And so what's personally motivating to us is, and the thing that we look forward to the most is that in the work that we do, in order to serve the church, it's to find faithful pastors for those churches without a pastor.
Yep.
And I think that's the thing I look forward to the most. It's the thing that gets me out of the bed in the morning and say, okay, Lord, please send us more faithful laborers.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of churches and a lot of people right now without a pastor who need a pastor. And I could tell a lot of stories of the people that, you know, we've cared for, and to think that now they don't have a pastor to care for them is something that I look forward to in 24, getting more of those vacant churches filled.
Yeah, that's amazing. When I remember, Jesse, when shortly after you came, you preached your first sermon in the chapel, and a couple of your members from your previous congregation, where you had previously been called, came to listen. And I happened to be sitting, I don't remember if it was right in front of or right behind these people, and I saw tears. And so when I introduced myself, I couldn't help but on the one hand feel a little guilty, and I fessed up and said, I'm sorry, I'm probably the reason that your pastor is now serving here, because I really advocated for him to come to Concordia Seminary and I'll be his boss. But I also thanked them because they sent you to us, and as hard as it was to let go of you, they were filled with great joy that you're here and that you'll, they just missed you terribly. And yet they were, I think very, very comforted that you were here in this role and you'd be sending out pastors for Christ's sheep. And that, I think, is the way it is for any congregation, sending people that they love from their congregation that are members, that are plugged in, and we're going to send you off to the seminary. It's kind of, it's a self-sacrificing, self-giving thing to send somebody to the seminary, but what a blessing for God's people.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we will have eternity together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And for some of us, a little bit of time, as you guys were talking about the process and like not knowing what it was going to be like when we got here. And as Tom, you gave us a look because you were like, we. and so it's been a blessing, an incredible blessing since I've been here, which just like a week ago was officially 3 years, which is
3 years
crazy to me, by the way. Because another classmate of ours, Alec Fisher, who teaches online languages for the seminary, he was a guest. It was just this opportunity to stop and think, because when we were looking for people to fill out the positions that we needed, we didn't know who was going to apply. We didn't know who we were going to come across. But in the first round, we had ideas about people, and we saw Tom Schlund, and I didn't know much about your life previous to becoming called here. But then we sat around and we talked, and we had conversations, and then we're like, yeah, we need Tom on our team. And then there was one more space. And I just remember, I think it was a President Egger came back from the Missouri district, and he said, hey, like, you guys should think about Jesse Keeker. And Ben brought it up in a team meeting, and I didn't spend a ton of time with Jesse. The most fond memory I have of you wasn't while we were in seminary together, is when you came to the house that I was living at when Eric's dad died. Mm. And I just remember you showing up for Eric that day. I was like, man, 1 year in, this guy is a remarkable pastor already. Well, anyway, and then it wasn't until reflecting on like you guys accepting calls and coming, I was like, man, to get this opportunity to work with our classmates. Because what happens when you come to seminary, we all know, you know your class really well.
Yeah.
And those are the guys that, like, when somebody's like, when did you go to seminary, and you find out you overlapped, it's like, oh yeah, I think maybe we like bumped shoulders in and out of chapel one day. But it's the guys you sit in class with and you hear ask good and dumb questions, or at least good and bad questions, that you kind of like grow up with, and then you go off on Vicarage and you come back and you reflect on your experiences together. That is I don't know how to, when people ask me about it, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It is very, it's a very experiential thing of what you think about those guys. And to be able to serve in this ministry together. Exactly. Because it is, people ask all the time, it's very pastoral. If somebody comes across my office phone number, email, and they haven't submitted an RFI, I kind of know kind of the things about the conversation you're going to have, but it is, you get on the phone and they're trying to decide, like, either they're young or their second career, can I do this? And it's like, well, let me tell you about a guy who by no natural reason should be a pastor, AKA me, except for the grace of God. And it's like, you know, yeah. You get taught, it's not like you come here, it's like, I want to be a pastor. You come here for a couple months and like, we give you a seal. And it's like, all right, get it. Like, no, you come and you learn how to do it. And you learn how to do it from guys that are really remarkable. And back to your question, do pastors need to be admissions officers? Well, when guys have these questions about being a pastor, like, if you don't know, you don't know. And it's that experience even of just going through it, even including Vicarage, where it's all these little marks that we have in the process when people are also like wondering, does the process need to be the way it is? So I genuinely don't know a better way to do it. There's certainly other ways to make informed pastors, but I think the way CSL, the seminary, has figured out how to do it is pretty good. We're creating some really great pastors for the world.
I totally agree. I think that we should do some ripe for the picking.
I saw your phone. I'm ready for it.
All right, I'll start. So ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree. You know the drill. Ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree. Crunchy, natural peanut butter.
Oh, Tom eats a PB&J almost every week for lunch. So
that's true.
I can natural answer for him.
Or with all this
trans fat.
Fake oils mixed in. Well, do you like it creamy?
No,
or
I'm.
Do you like the natural? Like, have to stir up the jar.
Right. I would say it's a ripe for the picking for me. Although we're not quite bougie enough to buy the all natural peanut butter all the time. But it is good to have some good natural stuff.
Yeah.
I did have a bad experience once though, because I got some as a snack. So in my first year serving in Iowa, Beth was still living here. And so we came, got some of it as a snack, and I got it confiscated from me at TSA at the airport going back. So I wish that wasn't the case. It was over 3 ounces. So
bummer. Oh.
So maybe it was just ripe for the picking for the TSA right. officer.
Right.
He's like, I need me some peanut butter.
I'll leave it on the tree.
Oh.
I'm a fan of just the regular creamy peanut butter. But almond butter is about as bougie as I get, I guess. But there's this brand at Walmart by Maranatha. And I thought, that's got to be a Christian group. And there's this power protein shake I would make when I was running that needed almond butter. Hmm. So that would be ripe for the picking. But natural peanut butter, I'm going to leave it on the tree.
Well, as you can tell, it's ripe for the picking for me. I had a natural crunchy peanut butter sandwich today. And I almost can't do the regular, like, Jiffy, Skippy peanut butter that's all whipped up with all the fake oils and stuff. It just makes me, I can't do it. But natural, stirred up from the jar. You know me. I'm bougie about everything. It's got to be natural or nothing.
So it's not the natural part of it. It's the crunchy peanut butter part. It's
natural creamy as
well. Yeah. If it wasn't crunchy, like, so I don't have, so I mean, you and Day Day would have beef, but like David, my son, my youngest son, probably eats 3 peanut butter sandwiches on a daily basis.
We have jars and jars of this Jiffy junk in our house too, and my kids love it.
Yeah.
Fine. It's also filled with a bunch of sugar.
So the peanut butter, which makes it taste better. Anyway, the peanut butter that you have to stir, it's fine. That's fine, but just not the chunky part. So because you were so specific with the chunky natural, it's leave it on the tree for me.
The viewers know. I'm a little picky about my food. I have another couple of food ones,
I have,
too. So
everybody can be picky about food, but few are as particular as you. All right, I think I've asked this one of somebody before, but I don't know. Like, I never really know what I've asked yet, and so people have forgotten by now. They'll, like, go back. Anyway, they won't. Right for the pick and leave it on the tree, water parks.
Oh, I am torn on this one.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm a redhead, so let's just get that out there.
You can only be out in the sun for about 3 minutes.
Exactly. So, I mean,
you're one of those guys that have, like, it's not even rubbed in. It's just, like, white.
I'm just white. Yeah. I immediately have all these visions of me, like, putting sunblock on for the fifth time, you know, on a day at a water park. But I love the water park.
Yeah.
And that we've got 4 kids, and you know, Great Wolf Lodge is their favorite place. And that's actually, that's right for the picking.
Yeah,
that's an indoor water park.
Incredible. Right. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah. So I'll say right for the picking as probably a rare redhead would answer to that one. But yeah, I'm a fan.
I was slightly torn too. It's ripe for the picking for me, but I'm torn in a different way. I like them, but I have 2 young children right now. So it's way more work to go to a place like that currently in our life because you can only go into certain parts. So you have to, like, trade off, and one person has to be with the kids and one gets to enjoy whatever it is you're doing. So give me another, like, 3 or 4 years and it will be fully ripe for the picking.
Definitely ripe for the picking for the Haupts. We love water parks, and we will almost every vacation we will make sure that there's at least 1 or 2 water parks in, because that's just something we love to do as a family. My wife and the boys really love just swimming in general. I don't love to swim, but I do enjoy water parks.
It's very ripe for the picking for me.
Yeah,
I don't particularly enjoy public pools. I think they're fairly disgusting. But if you put in a speed slide and one that swirls around, I'll forget all about the disgusting bacteria that we're swimming in because it's exciting. So just like you, the last time we went on a vacation where there was a water park, only Johnny was tall enough to go. Mm-hmm. And like Talitha and David, our 2 youngest, who could be twins if you didn't know any better, especially now. Well, anyway, they were just like 2 inches too short, and Dorothy doesn't like heights, so it was perfect. So only me and Johnny could go anyway. So I didn't have to like do the whole babysitting thing. It was just me and Johnny clowning around. So anytime like he wanted to get away from his siblings, we'd go to the slides, and it was all right. Yeah, nice. So very ripe for the picking.
Oh, boy.
Ben's food takes are my favorite part of Under the Fig Tree.
Ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree. Nando's. Sorry, listeners, viewers, a little bit of an inside joke here, but we're going to we're probably going to tell it, or I'll at least tell you my opinion of Nando's. It's well, do one of you want to talk about what Nando's is?
This will be the question that gets us not invited back on Under the Fig Tree.
Well, we'll see. I don't know.
That's true.
I'm almost certain. If you make the invitation, then we will. Micah and I have differing opinions on this. We've talked about this before.
Just remember that one of us is the host and the other is the co-host.
So well, this is I feel like Micah should describe it since it's...
This is my right for the picking, though. But go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Like, there's options, but it's peri-peri chicken, which is like North African and Portuguese seasonings combined, and it's grilled. So if... You can get like wraps and things like that, but if you go like I go, you just focus on the wings and they're grilled to perfection. But anyway, bone-in chicken always tastes better, everybody. Just remember that. So it's a chicken restaurant. And the first time I experienced it was in the UK. And then the only one I knew of in America for a long time was in Washington, D.C., which I've been to. I didn't go to D.C. for Nando's, but I went to D.C., so I went to Nando's. And now there's some in Chicago, and I think it's making its way across the country.
But it's not all bone-in, right?
No. You can, like, every chicken restaurant, you can get, like a filet or something like that, chicken filet. Yeah. A sandwich, wraps. You can get whatever you want. But I love chicken wings.
Go ahead, Tom. I went first last time.
I mean, I'll leave this one on the tree. We went as a team in Chicago when we were there last year.
So sad.
I mean, I would go back to try it again since you've spoken so highly of it. Our experience there wasn't quite to the expectation that you gave us, but I probably wouldn't go out of my way to find one.
Fair.
Okay, it's ripe for the picking for me, but for different reasons.
Okay.
So, you know, you have that food that it takes you back to a memory or a time, you know, like mom's apple pie or something. You think of Thanksgiving
like
or
the
pumpkin
first time
pie.
You went to McDonald's.
I don't remember my first time going to McDonald's. But anyway, so Nando's. So when I think Micah had booked my trip to Concordia, Chicago I even got here.
Oh, yeah.
So from day one, once I was here, Micah's like, you know, we're going to Chicago in like 10 days together. And I said, okay, you know, what else do I have to do besides drive Tom crazy?
And there's this chicken place.
So Micah and I went to Chicago together, and of course, because I'm with Micah, we went to Nando's. And so now when I think of Nando's, it's sentimental now. It will always be sentimental to my first, like, initial week or two of working at the seminary.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. So it doesn't have anything to do with the food.
That's not what he said. don't put words in his mouth.
So as you can tell, Nando's was a leave it on the tree for me. Overpriced chicken nuggets was how I would describe it.
She got the chicken wings.
And I probably should have.
I never told you to order chicken nuggets or chicken sandwiches.
The description of North African Portuguese fused flavors sounds amazing. And I'm very open to adventuresome eating and things that are not your typical. I don't like McDonald's, but it was overpriced chicken nuggets for me.
It's just hard when you can't do spice. That's the real challenge, right?
Well, and I will even do. I've had really spicy wings at BW's, It just was.
Well, clearly, it's very ripe for the picking for me, and I will.
Maybe it was just overhyped.
Stop. I will say this. I will say this. Both times that I have been with you all going to a Nando's. So when me and Jesse did go that first time, I mean they were asking us not to walk on their floors.
Right.
It was, dude. Like they were redoing their floors or something like that. I was like, why don't you close? And then I'm pretty sure they forgot some of our food.
Well, you're really selling it, man.
Well, I mean, so like the thing is, it's like when you have a franchise, when there's a franchise restaurant and you go, there are variables for each one. And when we went to the one together downtown Chicago as a team, it was very busy, was very lunchtime. And sometimes if you go at the peak of lunchtime, you don't get the best of service. That's just a reality of going to a restaurant at that point. And I will also say this. I've now been to Nando's 4 times in Chicago. And as a fan of Nando's, those 4 times have not lived up to my expectations. So including the time that I reluctantly say it wasn't their best showing, although that has nothing to do with the brand of Nando's, just the times that we've been. Every single time I went in the UK, it knocked it out of the park.
Enrollment road trip to London. One of these days, Under the Fig Tree is going to have such a reputation that when we talk about a Ripe for the Picking, we'll get an immediate comment back from Nando's, and they'll say, "Oh, we'll make it all up to you."
Listen,
and we're gonna send in food for your mukbang, and it's gonna be.
So if you I don't know how many Nando's there are around the country. If you live in Chicago, don't go at a peak meal time. So like you're gonna be the customer that they really care about and dedicate their time to. If you live in DC, that one was actually spot on. And then this is the other thing, when you go across the sea, there's different laws when it comes to food. And like, I don't want to say America doesn't care about us like European countries do, but
they don't
allow a lot more preservatives and additives in our food than they do in the UK. Exactly. So there's certain things that goes in our food that's illegal in the UK. And that was when I did Westfield House for a year and then I came back, like my gut had to readjust to American food, and it took like 2 months. Anyway. All right. Try Nando's, though. Don't listen to Ben. I think our viewers and listeners are on my side when it comes to food. That's how I imagine the day anyway. They might not be, but I assume that they are. All right. This one's not food, but my last one will be. Ripe for the Picking, Leave It on the Tree, NASCAR.
Now or like circa 2004?
I don't know if there's a difference. Now I've just given my where I sit.
So I was a big
Jeff Gordon
fan. Yes. Yeah. Yep. I love Jeff Gordon. I was actually in the Jeff Gordon fan club. Yeah. So I drew a picture of his car and colored it, you know, and you'd send it off and then magically it would come back signed by Jeff Gordon. So
wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. You have that on your wall at home still?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Right by my bed. I look at it.
He had a house down the street from the vicarage and First Congregation that I served.
Oh, wow. Did you hear him racing by every
week? No, but when we drove past his house, it was pretty nice.
Yeah, I bet.
Sure it was.
Right on the beach.
Yeah, but I haven't watched a NASCAR race in probably 10 years, so okay. I'm going to have to leave it on the tree.
This could be my Ben's cat moment, I think. I'll just say leave it on the tree. I don't really understand NASCAR, and I don't know if I should go any further than that as
Ben's
to not
cat moment.
Offend anyone
it.
Else, but...
Infamy.
Yeah, I'll just leave that one on the tree.
Well, maybe it's Ripe for the Picking for me then, so we can be opposite
about
that.
Nice. Yeah, it's leave it on the tree for me. I just don't get it. Turn left or turn right? I don't know.
Whichever one.
Usually left, but there's road races where you turn both ways.
In NASCAR?
That's not NASCAR.
No, there's like a couple of tracks where it's kind of windy.
Yeah, NASCAR is just like turn left.
No,
turn
not
left,
all of them.
All right, see?
No? Okay.
Yeah.
Misconceptions, man. That's how people. Right.
Yeah.
Does that completely change your view now?
Nope.
Now that we know that.
Reconsider.
Totally. No. You have to turn right sometimes. Oh, I'm
right.
You know, I genuinely don't know what prompted me to put NASCAR on my list. It is absolutely leave it on the tree for me. When during football season, and if I turn on Fox News, when football games are playing and a NASCAR race is on, I am highly offended. Like how do you justify playing this over football? Your ratings have to be worse. Any football game should have higher ratings than a NASCAR race to me. I could be drastically wrong. And people are going to be, no, when it's the highest rate. But like,
am I wrong that the only reason to watch NASCAR, kind of like the only reason to watch hockey, is
if it crashes?
So you watch NASCAR for the crashes, you watch hockey for the fights.
I think like the last 8 laps of a NASCAR race, that could be televised because that's exciting. It's about to be over.
Yeah,
but the
that's
other
true.
492?
And, right.
There's side benefits. Here I am. I didn't realize I was such
else.
A fan of NASCAR. Here
Jesse,
I am to their
the,
defense.
NASCAR let me defend them.
Yes, yes. Yeah. There's side benefits to watching NASCAR.
Like taking a nap.
Yes. Yes, to the hum. So this is my childhood. Coming home from church on Sunday, laying on the carpet,
all right,
sleeping to the and then waking up for the last 10 laps. I mean, that's how you watch NASCAR.
All right, all right. So maybe I've just tried watching
the
wrong
way. 500,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, last one. Ripe for the picking or leave it on the... All of mine are food related today. Ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree. Jelly-filled donuts.
Ripe for the picking. Oh, yeah. There's a great bakery in my hometown, Heckley's Bakery. Mm. And, yeah, jelly-filled donuts or just the regular glazed donuts. Yeah, I'm a big fan. My wife is leaving on the tree, though, so it never works out.
Yeah, they'd be right for the picking for me, too. Although most donuts are pretty good, so.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so it's ripe for the picking for me. Kind of surprisingly, I had – my in-laws were in town over the weekend, and they brought donuts, and I don't know, a day or two after they left, there was that one donut still in the donut box, and it was like nobody wanted that donut. And I just thought, I'm going to – go ahead and try it.
Dicey.
Cut it in half. It's already fairly stale. And the jelly was just this like bright red ooze. There were no seeds in it. They were not even trying to make this like a natural jelly. It was like sugar and flavorings that were all artificial. And it was so good. I had the other half.
Smear a little
right
Jif peanut butter on it. Yeah, be good.
Like, only natural peanut butter.
I shouldn't tell anybody no that I'm eating this because my bougie reputation is going to go out the window.
There
but it was
went.
So good. It, trash food. But yeah, it was ripe for the picking for me.
So it comes with stipulations for me. Not any
good.
Jelly
it should.
Filled
that's,
donut. It, like,
that's
it,
how
it
I
really
would typically answer.
Is dependent on the filling for me. So I like custard. I'm not a big fan of like the cream filled ones. That's just a little too sweet. But like if it's jelly filled, if it's jam, I'm all over it.
Yeah.
But if it is that like, because sometimes it oozes and sometimes you cut it and it stays in place.
Yeah, this one stayed in place.
Yeah, I'm, see, so when you said oozing, I thought like it oozed out, but like you
no,
sliced it and
just
it just sat
like,
there. Yeah, that's that. I probably would have left that one there.
Galactic ooze.
And then I'm. When they're powdered and instead of glazed, I'm not a fan either. So if it's a glazed actual jam filled donut, I'm all for it. Unless it's raspberry jam, then what's the
this
point?
This one was powdered sugar, except all the powdered sugar had basically been knocked off of it because I'm sure like six people had picked it up and thought about it and then put it back down. And yeah, all the kids were like poking at it and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, looks good.
This is one of those rare food moments where you like stitch me up and now people are like, who's bougie, Ben or right? Micah? Because yeah, no, like I can't even lie. It can't
By
be
the way,
any jam-filled donut.
I do have to say just here at the end, I have to go back on my word on Panda Express. We have decided that I will never eat Panda Express again. I had some serious allergy stuff.
Oh.
And we figured out that I have terrible allergies the day after, like, sneezing profusely.
Weird. Look at that.
Every time I have
on our trip to
Panda
Chicago,
Express.
We also ate Panda Express.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So one of our students actually said, I'm offended that you called Panda Express Chinese food. I think that's a fair take. Panda Express is clearly American food.
Oh, yeah.
Filled with tons of preservatives. And this is you're exactly right about Americans and their food. Panda Express dumps lots of bad stuff in their food. I'm sure of it.
Sure.
So
we lost that sponsorship too.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't consider Panda Express Asian or Chinese. Like,
yeah.
If I'm like, oh, I want Chinese, I don't think of Panda Express, but I will eat it though. I'm not gonna lie. My Beijing beef is. They do something right.
I think I'm 23 minutes late for my appointment.
Oh, all right, here we go. Ben has to go. Last one, ripe for the picking, leave it on the tree, grapes and chicken salad.
Ripe for the picking. My vicarage was in Georgia, and there was a great chicken salad place, and that's where I first was introduced to it. Now my wife got the recipe, and I still have that to this day. Love the grapes and the chicken salad.
I'm here for it, too. Ripe for the picking.
Yeah, grapes, add some celery, some walnuts or some pecans, dump it all in there.
Well, let's leave it right on the tree, man. It's like one of those things where, like, I'll eat food that I don't like, especially if I'm at somebody's house and I'm hungry. Because it's not going to be like, do you have anything else to eat? I think that's the rudest thing you could ever possibly say to somebody who prepared a meal. And I'll eat it, and I'll make you think I enjoyed it. But if you invite me to your house and you put grapes in your chicken salad, it is disappointing. It's almost as disappointing if, and this is going to make me sound like a jerk, but it's like somebody invites you over for dinner or lunch, and it's like a vegetarian meal. Like at least some chicken. I don't know. A little protein. And don't tell me like the chickpeas have protein in them. Anyway.
If you're a vegetarian. Weren't you a chemist? Chickpeas have protein in them. I mean, we're.
Yeah, they do, but I mean, anyway. So.
No. I wanted to let that awkwardness.
Grapes and chicken salad is leaving on the table for me.
So we usually ask our guests, what's one last piece of advice that you would leave with our listeners? So you hand out a fair amount of advice to prospective students, but what's the kind of your go-to?
If you haven't reached out to your pastor, do it today. And talk with your pastor about the things that you've thought of from time to time.
Yeah, that's good.
If you've already talked with your pastor and you're listening to this podcast, please reach out to us. And we would love to talk with you, and so that we can get to know you, but most importantly, so that we can begin to pray for you.
Yeah.
And encourage you to continue to pray as well. So I know that's not one piece of advice, but that's what I would say.
Yeah. We mentioned second career students before. I think I would say it's never too late.
Mm. Yeah.
I think one of the conversations that we have, you know, is sometimes people worrying, you know, is it too late in life for me to make this decision? And it's never too late. We've got people all over the age spectrum that come and, you know, listen to those people who've been talking into your life. And whether that's you come when you're 22 or you come when you're 62, we're here for it.
Fantastic.
Great. Well, thank you both for joining us today. It's well overdue, and I'm sure some point in the future we'll have you back on. But if you're listening and never have watched this on YouTube, make sure to check this episode on YouTube, because you can see who our two admissions officers are, the guys that you would be working with alongside your application process. And as always, if you like this episode, like it. Subscribe to Concordia Seminary's YouTube page. If you're thinking about being a church worker, don't think too hard. Fill out the request for information link below. Let us know who you are, so at least you have an extra sounding board as you go through your discernment process. You know, you just know that you don't have to discern these things by yourself. The Lord of the church, Jesus, gave us the church for a reason, to be there for each other. And then if you're listening and you know somebody who you think might be a good church worker in the future, don't think it again. Make sure you tell them, because you could be the person who encourages them to take that step forward. And then point them towards the request for information, because again, we don't know the people who we don't know. We need your help to find out who they are, where they are, and how we can contact them. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys next time under the fig tree.